You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com.
Some dogs look at you like you're insane.
Notice your dog's intelligence is different to yours.
We're killing our dogs. Wild and woolly welcome wagon.
The outside of a dog is really, really good. It's the inside of a person.
Centricity.
Hello and welcome to episode 85 of Dogcast Radio. Coming up later, we'll have an interview with Tim and Kathy Glass about the book that tells their story, Just This Side of Heaven.
It's a journey that celebrates life through loss. And basically, it's a story of love and devotion between a human and a pet.
But before that, we have some Crufts coverage. There was a lot of media hype about Crufts this year. But if you attended, you'll know it was very much business as usual at the show. There is far more going on than just dog showing, and there are great stories everywhere. I talked to Sue Cole, a teacher at Thorpe House School, Norwich. She and the Sofa Club, that's Speaking Out for Animals, have been working on a very special project.
We're campaigning to make microchipping law. We just feel that there's been so many abandoned, stolen, lost dogs that microchipping is the simple answer to it, really, that dogs can easily be returned to their owners. And also, if dogs have been treated cruelly, bad owners can be traced easily.
It definitely would be a step towards much, much more responsible dog ownership, wouldn't it?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's all about responsible pet ownership, and people do need to be more responsible, and they need to think about that before perhaps they even take on a dog in the first place. It may make them think about it twice. It's way too easy to have an animal these days.
I mean, the other thing is, often people don't think about what if, and it's not till the dog's gone missing or been stolen that occurs, and it gives them a much better shot at coming back to their family, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely, yes. I mean, we hear so many stories of dogs going missing for sometimes years, and then by chance they get microchipped, and they are then returned to their owners, and their owners are obviously delighted. They can be all at the other side of the country and then still be returned to their owners, or a gate can be left open, dog can be picked up, scanned and returned to their owner. And it's a lot cheaper for the owner too, because if they're picked up by the local council, because the councils are responsible for stray dogs now, they've then got to pay all the costs of boarding costs. So it's cheaper in the long run to have a microchip.
Absolutely. Best thing. You're here today at Crufts with the Dog Theft Action, who's working closely with the Vets Get Scanning appeal. So, and another important message is people, the agencies that deal with lost or stolen dogs must scan, mustn't they?
Oh yes, there's absolutely no point in having a microchip unless people are prepared to scan. And Debbie Matthews set up Vets Get Scanning when her dogs were stolen, and Margaret from Dog Theft Action, her dog was stolen, and so between them they work together and they're doing a fantastic job. This afternoon at 4:30 we are being presented with two scanners, which we're going to take back to two of our local sanctuaries that have a scanner on their wish list, and so we're providing it for them through Dog Theft Action. We raised the money for it through a cake sale and biscuit sale, and we raised enough money to buy two, which we're really pleased about.
And you've actually achieved a lot, haven't you? And you've done a lot so far, and there's a lot of ways that people can support you, is that right?
Oh yes, absolutely, yes. We've got over 7,000 signatures, or nearly 7,500 signatures on our petition, and the girls are here today asking people to sign it. Yes, they can support us by that, and they can also support us by signing the petition, and they can also contact their MP, because there's shortly to be an EDM going out, an early day motion, for people to encourage their MPs to sign it, and then that will take it even closer to being law.
And it's a very good cause, and the children are getting a marvellous experience here, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. From a teacher's point of view, it's all about communication skills. They have to write letters, so I can tick lots of boxes. That we've covered all sorts of things. They've gained a lot of confidence. We've got a child in the group here today who was a very nervous nervous child a couple of years ago, but I've already seen her this morning go up to people that she's never met with a clipboard and ask them to sign the petition. It's absolutely fabulous.
Sue, I hope you have a great Crufts.
Thank you very much, and you too.
Sue was at Crufts with some wonderful young ladies who were a testament to the fact that those in and approaching their teenage years can still be articulate and enthusiastic. Here's proof, Lauren.
The Sofa Club from Thorpehouse School in Norwich are trying to make microchipping of all dogs compulsory. We think this will help a lot of dogs, as it's just going to save so many lives if they can get returned to their owner safely.
Yes, so, which is really important.
Yeah, definitely, because we want as many dogs to be happy as we can, so we're just trying to help them as much as possible.
Yeah. And do a lot of you have dogs? Is that where the motivation comes from?
Yeah, well, a lot of us do have dogs, and just because we all feel so strongly about animal care, and especially dogs, because we think many people have dogs as pets, we just want as many to be happy as possible.
Yeah,
so
now you're here at Crufts, but you've not only done that, you've been to Parliament, is that right?
Yeah, we went to Parliament in October, and we also went in February as well. In February, only a few girls went, but they managed to get an EDM, an early day motion. So yeah, we felt that's really pushing us, and now because of all of our supporters of our campaign, it's really helping us keep going.
Yeah. So it's been a positive experience for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's really helped a lot of our confidence and everything as well. So it's just, it's good, and it's good fun.
Yeah. I think as well, sometimes you get told, you know, one person or a few people can't make a difference. You know, would you agree with that?
No, definitely not. I think we really, if we just try, then we can get wherever we need to. I mean, we just want to get this law, so we'll just push until we get there, basically.
And you've got some great sort of celebrity supporters, haven't you?
Yeah, we've got a lot of supporters. Mark Abraham is our patron, Sofa's patron, and he's really helped us, and we've got now a lot of celebrity supporters who have signed the petition and are really in favour of our campaign.
Yeah.
We've got Jilly Cooper, who's an author.
Yeah, and very into dogs, isn't she?
Yeah, she is. We've also got Debbie Matthews, who is Bruce Forsyth's daughter. She runs the Vets Get Scanning campaign, and she's 100% behind our campaign as well. We think if we work together, we could push it even further.
Yeah.
Anthony Heads and Carissa Baldwin, who's the chief executive of the Dogs Trust.
Brilliant. So you've done wonders, haven't you?
Yeah. We really want to get there. We think we can, definitely.
I think you will, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, we're pretty up for it.
Best of luck with it, Lauren.
Thank you very much.
You can find links on the Dogcast Radio site to the Sofa Club website and to the petition you can sign to support them. Lauren mentioned TV vet Mark Abraham, who is the Sofa Club's patron. He was very impressed with Sue and her girls, and I think together they will succeed with the microchipping campaign. Mark was at Crufts in many capacities. He is the veterinary advisor to the Kennel Club, and he was there as co-founder of the website thepet.net. I spoke to him and business partner Andrew Seal about an award scheme they have for dog and pet-friendly businesses.
We believe that in this day and age, people can share experiences, and pet owners who are passionate about customer service and those businesses that really do care about animals, those people should be able to nominate businesses and who can get recognition in the industry from both trade and consumer angles. So what we've done is set up the Pet.net Awards, which we're launching now, and the finals will be in the Ultimate Pet Show in the first bank holiday weekend in May. And basically, we're asking people to nominate their most pet-friendly businesses, which is pubs, restaurants, kennels, catteries, anything that touches your pet's life or lifestyle, or your lifestyle involving your animal, and really highlight them, why they're good. It's completely free, with the view of driving more business towards them, making pet ownership more affordable, especially in this economic climate, and to keep Britain owning pets and looking after them responsibly. And we want to honour those businesses who are really doing their bit for making people wanting to have pets and adopt rescue pets and enjoy having pets. There's too many businesses who are ripping people off, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And we want to sort of let the people decide, using the power of the mob, if you like, to drive more businesses towards the ones that put pets before profit and make it a pleasure to own a pet rather than questioning if these businesses are doing things for the right reasons.
Yeah. From my own experience, it certainly makes a difference when you get to a cafe or a pub, whether it's the dog goes outside or, yeah, bring the dog in, and you feel much more at home and welcome and prepared to spend money if they welcome the dog, don't you?
Yeah, it's all about attitudes. I mean, I think we're still quite far behind France in that respect. But things like the Kennel Clubs Open for Dog scheme has helped a lot. You know, the stickers in people's windows. And yeah, you go to a place that accepts your dog, as you say, you'll spend money, you'll enjoy it, you'll spend longer there, you'll tell your friends, and it suddenly becomes a bit of a landmark on you and your pet's lifestyle map.
Yeah.
So it's a way you can always go back and enjoy. So we really want to drive more business towards the guys who deserve it, the good guys as we see them, that make it fun and happy to own a pet and, you know, to enjoy them.
Definitely. Now, Andrew, the power of the internet is really important to you, isn't it? And it does empower pet owners to get together and have a say, doesn't it?
Well, that's right. I think it's, you know, the growth of social networking online with sites like Facebook has just been phenomenal over the last few years. And we really wanted to give that opportunity to pet owners to kind of share their experiences with other pet owners, because a lot of recent surveys have been saying that, you know, people are much more likely to take a recommendation from a friend or, you know, even online over other forms of media or newspapers and things like that. So, you know, that's really what the Pet.net's about. It's about allowing pet owners to share their experiences. And already today on the stand, I've had people coming up to me saying, oh, I went to a dog-friendly hotel, and they say they're dog-friendly, but they weren't really. They asked us to keep the dogs in the car and things like that while we were having breakfast. And it's that kind of opinion, so they can help other people. And also, you know, give the positive experiences. You know, we've had great hotels we've been to and share those with each other. And as Mark says, you know, spread the word and help people find the best for their pet.
Yeah, it's definitely so frustrating when somewhere markets itself as pet dog friendly and you get there, yeah, on a lead in the car park. What point is that?
Well, no, that's just, you know, as a dog owner, that always kind of shocks me. And it is quite difficult sometimes to, you know, you're going away to find somewhere. I mean, that's, you know, one of the reasons that inspired us to set the site up, because, you know, I'm often trying to go away for a, you know, quick weekend break or somewhere with my dog. And it's really hard to find somewhere that you can actually get genuine advice on what do they mean by pet friendly, because it's a very wide definition, you know, what pet friendly is.
And are you having a good cruft so far?
Oh, it's fantastic. It's my first time kind of exhibiting here, where the Pet.net's on it, first time exhibiting here. And no, it's been a great experience. I mean, it's just everyone's so passionate about what they're doing. It's just really fun to be here.
And are you having a good cruft as well?
I'm absolutely loving it. I love this place. And I'm still surprised by the number of people that come and who are first-timers, who don't sort of seem to realise it's not just about showing pedigree dogs. It's about there's so much more else going on. There's agility, there's all the support dogs, the assistance dogs, the cancer-sniffing dogs. You know, there's just so much here. It's a celebration of dog ownership rather than, you know, showing pedigree dogs, which is going on. It's fascinating to see. So, yeah, I love it here. I'm obviously the veterinary advisor to the Kennel Club, so I've got many roles here, and I'm you know, promoting microchipping and basically responsible pet ownership in general. Accredited breeders is another one. So I'm thrilled to be here, and I love talking to you and like-minded people that obviously love dogs, and that we can all work together for the best for dogs.
Well, enjoy the rest of Croft.
And I'll just tell you the name of the website again.
And what's
the website,
Mark, what's
we've just been talking about for 5 minutes.
Mark, what's the name of the website?
Actually, that's a great question.
Yeah, I'm glad I
thought. It's www.thepet.net. So that's www.thepet.net. Thank you.
Okay. Was that www.thepet.net there?
I think it was, yeah.
Okay.
I think it was www.thepet.net.
If you didn't quite catch that, we'll put a link on.
There you go.
I think the celebratory air of Crufts had got to both of them at the end there. But just in case you missed that website address, there is indeed a link on the Dogcast Radio site to thepet.net. Our Crufts coverage continues later in the show. Famous beagles. According to cartoon cat Garfield, Odie the dog is half beagle and half brick. You're listening to Dogcast Radio on www.dogcastradio.com. I recently read Just This Side of Heaven, written by Tim Glass. It's a lovely book with a very strong positive message, and it's full of the ups and downs of life with a dog. I was really pleased to be able to talk to Tim and Kathy Glass, whose story is told in the book.
Well, Julie, for you listeners, it's a journey that celebrates life through loss. And basically, it's a story of love and devotion between a human and a pet in its simplest form.
Yeah, yeah. Now, obviously, the dogs you love are beagles, and they came into your life quite early on and accidentally almost, didn't they?
Well, that's correct. I mean, the very first beagle that was ever into my life, as you know by reading the book, I was on my way to school one day, and there was a tiny little beagle in the highway during rush hour. And I rescued the beagle, and by accident, as you said, that's the way I came into the beagle family, I guess, or the breed.
Yeah, yeah. What is it about them that appeals to you? Can you put that into words at all?
I guess for me, and I think with anybody, and again, this book, I think will... People that have any breed of dog, and even we've had cat lovers tell us they can relate to the book. But I think for me, with the beagles, it's the sad eyes, the long ears. It's just that the facial expressions just melt my heart. And, I mean, I'm just putty in their paws.
Yeah, yeah. Beagles brought you and Kathy together in the first place, didn't they?
That is correct, and that's probably a question that probably Kathy can address for you a little bit better than myself.
Okay.
We were both members of a beagle group that's on the internet where you can post messages and people can ask questions, you know, for advice or share stories and things like that. And when his first beagle had died, a friend of Tim's had posted it on this group, and a lot of people sent him messages of condolence, and he didn't answer them all because he received a couple hundred, but he did answer mine for some reason, and we started emailing back and forth at that point, and that's how it all started.
Yeah, yeah, so it was fate, wasn't it? You were meant to be together.
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. So... You ended up as a couple with a pack of three beagles, which was Gunner, Penny and Panda.
Correct.
Initially, wasn't it? So what was life like with those three beagles?
It was a little bit interesting adding Gunner into the mix. I mean, he was a really, really sweet dog, and he arrived, and the next day a huge box of all his toys arrived, and... So our toy population immediately, I think, tripled. But Penny was fine with it. Panda always has tended to be a little bit domineering, and she made sure that poor Gunner knew his place, which was beneath her. But once she established that, they really did all get along very well. And actually, at one point, Panda had to have surgery on her knee. And when she came home after the surgery, she didn't want her sister, Penny, anywhere near her, but she was okay with Gunner. So they really did all get along very well. So we were lucky that way.
Yeah, yeah. I do think it's lovely. I mean, it's lovely having one dog, two dogs, you know, three, whatever. But it's so interesting to watch their interactions with each other.
It is, you know, because sometimes they just all do their own thing. And then, you know, sometimes they would start playing and it was like, you know, the Beagle 500 through the house or the backyard. And, you know, they just all have their unique personalities. And so there is always plenty of entertainment.
Yes. Now, Penny in the book, she really comes across as a very self-assured, cheerful dog, and she very much reminded me of our, we have a Bichon Frise, and she's sort of a big personality and quite a small dog. Would you say that was fair to say of Penny?
Oh, that is very true of Penny. She just always just seemed to know, like, what she was doing or, you know, what was going on, and just very seemed in tune to everything. And, you know, the one time I was taking all the dogs for a walk by myself, and it's easier to do two at a time. So I was leaving her behind to go on a separate walk, and she wasn't having any part of that. And while I tried to get the other two out the door, she just managed to slip right through with no leash on. And she basically led, she knew our walk, you know, was pretty much the same every day. And she knew the way and the whole way around the neighborhood while I was having heart failure because she was loose. She just pranced along, and she knew the way home, and so, you know, we all managed to get home without any incidents. But, you know, that was just typical of her. Like, you know, I'm a big girl, and so that's the way she was.
Yeah, I mean, that's I love the way that was written, because it does come across that kind of, I can do this, Mom, you don't have to fuss. That really comes across.
Right. She just was really unique in that way.
Yeah. Now, maybe I need to speak to Tim again. There's an aspect of your life that the Beagles definitely sort of had a big share of. And I love the way you talk in the book about the fact that you read your work aloud. You write, you're a writer, and you read your work aloud. And you started reading it to them. And they would pick up on the mood of what you're reading to them.
That's correct, and I was never really quite sure. I mean, this started one of my mentors at the University of New Mexico. Actually, two of them had taught me to always read my work out loud so I could hear the words flow upon the page. And the odd thing about it is when I was doing that, I started noticing that the Beagles would surround, I mean, they would gather around me and listen to me read to them. And oddly enough, when I was working on an article, for instance, a health article or something else, that didn't involve them, they would fall asleep. So I knew they were actually reading. When I started the very first book, Kathy did not know that I was writing it. And Panda would come up on the weekends. We live in a two-story here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and she would come all the way up 18 stairs, stand at the top of the stairs and bark her head off at me. And Kathy was like, she couldn't figure out, she would say, well, you know, Daddy's not working in the office today. And the Panda wanted me to come up and read to her.
Oh.
So we oddly enough, we thought, okay, then the Sleepy Town Beagle series, which is the children's series, came out in audiobook format. Mm. We thought, okay, this will be something they'll enjoy. Because it's somebody else's voice, they walk away.
Oh.
So for some reason, if Kathy or myself reads to them, they love it. But anybody else, it seems like it doesn't work its magic, I guess.
Oh, bless. Oh. Now, that's funny, because the next thing I was sort of going to mention to you was, you mentioned this intuitive link that you have always had with your dogs.
You know, I guess, for lack of a better word, and that's what I said in the book, I do have some sort of an intuitive link that sort of drives Kathy up the wall and everybody else around me. It's weird, and I don't know, and you know, I don't want to step on any toes, of course, and I know everybody has different belief systems. I come from a very scientific background. In fact, even when I was in school, I was a computer scientist. And so I come from I actually prescribe to the theory that 2 + 2 must equal 4, but sometimes it doesn't, as you know.
Mm.
And this intuitive link that I have with the pups, it makes no sense. And so I really don't know what to say to that, other than I have this sense or a feeling. It's a strong feeling, but in talking to, and a lot of the people across the world about this book, and we receive emails on a daily basis. I think I found some of those emails to you, or the reviews that people have done on the book. They touch on some of the stuff that I talk about, and they say, you know, I can relate to that because I usually have a sense as well. And I think it goes to that closeness that you feel with somebody when you love someone or a pup so much. I think there is something that you can't really isolate or put a scientific verbiage to.
Yeah.
It basically is that it's an intuitive link. It's, you know, I basically refer to it as the same scenario that my mother used with me. When I was a child in high school, I'd come in from school, and if something went wrong at school or what have you, I'd open the door, and before I could pour a glass of milk, the woman was asking me, "You want to talk about it?" Julie, there it was no earthly way this woman could have known what she knew.
Yeah.
And she seemed to pick up on things, and I don't, you know, mother's intuition,
yeah,
you know, is what I always chalked it up to. And, you know, I really, other than I have that link, and it's a special link, and it's a special feeling. I knew when Penny was feeling bad, I knew, like, the stress she would feel with lightning and thunderstorms and what have you. She would just, I really had a sense, and even stated this to our veterinarian at the time, I felt really, really like a strong feeling that if we didn't get a handle on it, which no matter what we tried, pills and, you know, you name it, we tried everything in the book with Penny. When a thunderstorm would roll across these desert skies, that poor pup would just, she would just go crazy with it, and she would be under the bed until the storm left.
Mm.
So it was a sense, I guess, of this intuition. My honorary mother, you know, used to call me the Beagle Whisperer.
Yes.
I, you know, I put voice to the dogs, and I think a lot of people do. We, in fact, had a book review done by one of Amazon's top 100 reviewers on the Sleepy Town Beagles, and he basically picked up on that, is that he as well does the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Odd as it may seem, I mean, I can look at the dogs, and if Kathy is asking them a question or whatever, you know, I can pretty much pick up on what they're thinking, and they'll end up doing what I say they're thinking in the next breath, you know, and it's odd.
Yeah, I think you're lucky if you have that, because you know, a lot of us strive very hard to work out what's going on in our dogs' minds and sort of what they're thinking and how they feel about things. So I think it's very lucky if you have that so easily.
Yes, and I agree with that, Julie. It's a gift that I think that you know, it's something that's just wonderful if you have it, and you can kind of be in touch with your pets and their feelings and such.
Yeah. Now, it's a sad fact that gradually our dog's age overtakes our age, and I think that's one of the hardest aspects of dog ownership to deal with. Obviously, this story does deal with pet loss, and we see, you know, the lives of various beagles, you know, come to an end. Can you share with us some things that you feel might help listeners who have a dog going through a serious illness?
Yes, one of the things that, and of course this is my opinion, and being a pet owner for quite some years, I really believe a support system in place is vital to any pet lover. And, you know, if so many times if you lose a loved one, people know how to respond, Julie. They simply do. I mean, it's ingrained in us. We, from the time that we are born and to the time that we pass on, death is a rite of passage that we've come to learn about. We may not want to learn about it, but it's in our face, basically. We have to deal with it. through that, and with that said, so many times when we lose a loved one, we do in fact know how to respond. You might walk up to me and give me a hug, and you might express your feelings or share a story with me about the loved one, etc. All too often, though, pet lovers grieve all by themselves. They're almost closet cases. And I don't know in the UK if it's the same way, but over here, all too often, and it's not every time, but all too often, you just don't know what to do or what to say. And for instance, if you go into work and you've lost a pet, Kathy and I had an individual come up to us and say, well, it's only an animal. And that is the furthest thing from the truth. For many pet lovers, they are an extension of our family.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how else to say that. I mean, the love, whether they walk on two legs or four legs on this earth, it doesn't matter. There is love, and there's a bonding there. And so I suggest a support system. And by that, what I'm alluding to is there is usually like a local group that your listeners can go to, and I suggest doing this way before illness or even a death happens in a family. And the reason being is support systems help you celebrate milestones in your pet's life, or even that you are going through. Maybe it's a chewing stage that your young puppy is going through, and another pet lover has already been through this with maybe the same breed, and maybe they can share with you some tips or tricks that they utilize to get them through these rough spots. And the support system is vital, because once you reach the point where your pet is getting ill, or they may be passing away, there's a virtual hug if you are on the internet, and of course, safety is the most important thing with dealing with the internet. But I think for the most part, many dog communities are pretty much safe. But, I can't tell you how many times Kathy and I have pooled from that wealth of knowledge to the group that we belong to, which is iBark, and it's a group of beagle owners. And there's groups out there that could be breed-specific. They may not be breed-specific, but you may find one that is either local or a click away on the internet that has the same interest that you yourself do and you relate to. And it's really cool because, Julie, as you know, you can kind of sign up for these communities. And at that point, if you find that the interest or the people are not to your liking, you can switch, and there's tons of them out there. Like I said, they're either breed-specific or they're more general, and then you can drill down into them and find there's actual breeds or groups within them.
Yeah.
And when I lost my pet, Kathy, that's how I met Kathy. I mean, I wasn't even actually looking to be involved with anybody, but for some reason, we started talking via email, and the rest is history. We've been married since 2001. Like I said, I mean, it's very vital that you have some sort of support system, because, they do understand. There are other pet lovers out there, and no pet lover needs to suffer alone. I mean, it's just one of those things that I think is vital for recovery, closure, and healing. Knowledge is the other thing. When pet lovers are going through things, if you're at that point where you have the pet has an illness, whether it's a dog, a cat, a hamster, knowledge is the number one key that I can suggest. Be informed. Don't get your facts straight from your veterinarian. Don't be afraid, if you need a second opinion, to ask for that second opinion or even a third opinion. It's just like your own health. You would do that. And one of the things that I really, when I do talks to pet grieving and such, I talk about a thing called internal dialogue. Internal dialogue can be so vital to understand that. You can play Monday morning quarterback a million times, and what if I did this, or what if I would have tried this, or what if I fed the dog a different dog food, or was I a good enough pet owner? Mm. That internal dialogue can be devastating. It can drain you of vital energy that you need to make decisions for your pet and for yourself. After pet loss, you need to watch that internal dialogue and make absolutely sure that you take something and turn it into a positive. And I think that is very, very vital for pet owners.
Yeah, yeah. On the subject of the positive, you talk about something called the dash. So can you explain that to us, please?
Well, oddly enough, the dash is something that is has been around everybody. If you ever talked to anybody about the passing of a loved one, we talk about the year of death, the year of birth, but what really matters the most is the dash that is in between those 2 years. Mm-hmm. It's that tiny, very, very small little dash. And many times it's overlooked, and it resides right between the date of birth and the date of death on the headstone or in the memorial. That seemingly insignificant dash is much more important than either date. The dash represents the life that person or that pet lived. And when we talk about that to people on the radio or over the internet, I can't tell you how many times we have received emails from people that have told us that not only did it help them deal with pet loss, but it helped them deal with the loss of a mother, a loss of a spouse. One of the very first ones that I can remember was during the very first radio show after the release of the book, and it was based out of Ohio, and we were talking about somehow the conversation gravitated toward the dash. And the host picked up on it, and we started talking about the dash, and this woman emailed us within the hour after the interview aired, and she said, thank you so much. And basically what it was all about was it was 4 years to the date of her losing her husband, and she basically said, you know, this is what I've been doing wrong. I've been focusing on the death and not celebrating the life this man shared with me and lived. And we get that constantly. And that was something that we hadn't predicted, Julie. I mean, obviously when an author creates a book, you have to have a target market, in your mind.
Yeah.
And when I talked to the publisher, of course, that's what I said, pet owners, you know, dog, cat, whatever. Obviously knowing that death is death, and it doesn't matter whether it's two legs or four legs, but I really didn't know that we would receive so many positive responses to the dash and people picking up on the chapter on the dash and thanking us. And, you know, it's so easy, depending on what the last moments of that person or pet's life is like, your mind automatically turns to that, which many times is not a very pleasant thing. I mean, certainly with Penny, it was cancer, and that is definitely something that I don't want to remember Penny by.
Mm.
I would celebrate her life and this wonderful dog that had this stride to her that was just unbelievable.
Yeah.
You know, that's the things that I try to tell people about the dash and to realize that it's a celebration of life through loss. And, you know, what can I say? If it has helped people, that is the biggest paycheck any author can ever receive. And his career in Kathy feels the same way. You know, that is a wonderful thing. I can't tell you, when we get emails from people, and even hosts many times will funnel those emails to us, that, you know, there's somebody out there in the audience listening, that maybe the dash means something that you and I have not even fathomed in our mind.
Mm.
They hear the story of the dash, and they can put it into their own lives with either a pet or a loved one.
Yeah, yeah. As you say, death is death, whether it's someone with two legs or four. But I know after Penny's passing, you have been aware sort of a presence, and also you haven't sort of tried to brush the memory of Penny under the carpet. You still, I mean, lovely things like you still take her collar with you on walks occasionally, don't you?
That is correct. And I mean, I think that's all a part of the healing, Julie. I think whatever works for your listeners, that is important to not deny that. One of the things that I stress is don't try to second guess things. I mean, you know, Kathy and Panda and Tyler and I had a trip that we had to make up to Durango, Colorado. And as I was packing everything up for the Beagles and for Kathy and I, and trust me, traveling with pets is like traveling with two kids. I swear they had more baggage than we did. But as I was putting everything in the back of the vehicle, I looked over and I noticed Penny's collar, and I grabbed it and I hung it from the rear view mirror.
Mm.
It was my way, an outward expression, if you have it, for what we can't see. To me, I feel that, and I can feel her presence many, many times. I even had a host tell me one time, he said, when I look at this cover, Tim, I cannot tell you. It's just, there's just something about it. And he said, I can't explain it, but I just feel her presence.
Mm.
Now, I feel that. And so many times, and Kathy and I breathe in different ways. And so I felt that this outward expression of taking Penny's collar was showing Kathy, because Penny loved road trips. I mean, Penny was, and I think Kathy explained her personality pretty much for you,
that
she had this unbelievable personality that just sort of, and I mean, she sort of bounces off the page in the book as well. But, she loved road trips, and so I grabbed the collar. But I also started taking it with me on our daily walks. The other thing that happened, it was sort of off the wall, I guess, if you have it that way. I was walking by myself at the time, and I had made the corner around our block, and the sun was behind my back. Well, Panda and Penny are from the same parents, but they're 9 months apart, so their litters were 9 months apart. So, in essence, they do look very similar, and in the book, you can see in the center, there's some pictures of Penny and Panda, and I think even some of Tyler. But the bottom line is that as I turned this corner, the sun caught her shadow on the sidewalk in such a way that it stretched out before all of us. As Penny is always the leader of the pack, and she was always willing to go on walks, she was in front. And there was this shadow, and it looked exactly like Penny.
Mm.
And I had to smile to myself that, in my mind, I felt her presence.
Mm.
But oddly enough, Kathy and I, this was probably a month after Penny passed away. And honestly, Julie, I do not remember who told us this. Right after Penny passed away, someone said, I hope that Penny shows you that she is safe and she is okay now.
Mm.
Well, about a month after Penny's passing, Kathy and I are hanging curtains in our bedroom. I was on a stool, she was on a ladder. Tyler was in a bed next to us, and so was Panda.
Mm.
And I heard like a squeaky toy.
Mm.
And it was so odd. And at first, I didn't say anything. I just went about my business. The next thing, it happened again. On the third time, I finally said something to Kathy, and I said, did you hear that? And from her point of view, on the ladder, she could not see the two beagles laying in the bed. And she said, where's Tyler? Meaning, Tyler, Penny and Tyler used to always play toys. And Penny was a very aggressive, if she had one of the little squeaky toys, like we call them babies, the little stuffed toys, the dogs, the dogs, the squeaker inside. Penny was a very aggressive squeaker. I mean, she would run through the house squeaking that toy. And that was her call for Tyler to come play with her. And that's what we were hearing. And so we're both standing there, and I'm looking at the two dogs, and I'm like, no, Tyler and Panda are right here with us. So I went upstairs. Of course, we have three toy boxes in our home, and all the toys were just fine. There was nothing out of place. However, in the book, as I mentioned, Penny had one particular toy, and it was a little lamb. It was a little stuffed lamb. And it was called Bob. We nicknamed it Baba. And when she passed on, we put that with her. And we kept hearing the squeak. And it was like odd, but there is, I mean, there's no explanation.
No.
I mean, I do not have an explanation for it. But I think it's important to open our eyes and our minds and our hearts that sometimes maybe people are trying, maybe people and pets are trying to tell us they are okay, and for us to move forward with our lives.
The story of Tim and Kathy and their beagles has helped many people move on with their lives. And to find out more, you can go to justthissideofheaven.com or follow the link on the Dogcast Radio website. Famous beagles. Charlie Brown's dog Snoopy is a beagle. But did you know Gromit, of Wallace and Gromit fame, is one too? The Bella Moss Foundation offers support to pet owners affected by MRSA and other serious infections. The story of Jill's dog Bella, who died due to MRSA, is a touching one. Jill was at Crufts promoting the foundation, and she had good news.
We're here to celebrate and announce our new patrons. So unfortunately Claire Rayner is a little bit, you know, poorly, and she wants to step down. So Peter Purvis has become our new honorary patron, and Mark Abrahams, kennel club advisor to the kennel club. I am doing a lot all at once at the moment. And Mark Abrahams and Peter Purvis and Vince Hogan from Our Dogs are our new patrons. So it's a very exciting year.
So it's great, and you're getting a good response from the public?
Fantastic response from the public. We've got loads and loads of people coming along wanting to know more about MRSA and really interested in how to protect their pets from getting infections. That's the key, you know, what you can do. If you want to know more about animals and how they get MRSA and how to prevent it, you can go on our website, www.thebellamossfoundation.com. You can also go on our veterinary infection control website, which is www.veterinarynursetrainingonline.org, and that will take you to the infection control website. But do get in touch with the foundation, because we can help you and inform you on what to do to prevent infections occurring in pets, what your vet can do, and all of our literature is either sent by post or on the website.
I mean, it is a frightening area, but the good news is there are a lot of steps you can take to prevent it, can't you?
Absolutely. The things that you can do, first of all, is keep your pet healthy, avoid unnecessary long stays in the hospital, reduce the use of antibiotics, and if there's any suspected infection, swab and culture, get the vet to do that, and make sure it's targeted treatment, so you avoid giving, you know, too many antibiotics that are unnecessary, and make sure you identify the bacteria. So if there's any wound that's not healing from surgery, any red inflamed wound, any skin infection or repeated skin infections that aren't responding to broad spectrum antibiotics, ask the vet to swab and culture. And what we're seeing is that animals are recovering really well from early detection.
Brilliant. You're doing a great job, Jim.
Thank you very much.
I'm very interested in the online dog community, and I grabbed a quick chat with petstreet.co.uk's resident vet, Kat.
PetStreet is a social networking site for pet owners. So it's a bit like Facebook. You have your own profile page, you can upload pictures and blogs and stories about your animals. And my role on PetStreet is to provide veterinary information and advice. pet owners, our members will send me emails and messages and post on my forum with questions about their animals, health-related things. I blog about pets in the news, things that have happened to me in my job, and I also provide, you know, regular fact sheets about pet health issues and dental, diabetes, pet insurance, huge range of subjects, you know, and we're adding to it all the time.
Well, that's really nice for pet owners to have a vet who's sort of accessible and sort of to ask questions, because sometimes when you've been to the vet and you come back and you think, well, I forgot to ask such and such, so it's nice to have that facility.
Exactly. Obviously, I don't see my role as, I'm not there to diagnose problems and tell people what to do, but I see my role as providing extra information, because, yeah, you go to the vet who gives you a diagnosis, you're worried, you don't always take things in, you forget to ask questions. So often on Pet Street, I'm giving people general information about their problem. My dog's teeth are dirty. What should I do? Well, have a look. Maybe you should think about brushing them or eating some special chews. And I see it as providing information and making sure pet owners are armed with that information to then either go back to their vet and talk to it or feel reassured and they know where to go forward with their animals. Yeah.
Brilliant. And it's petstreet.co.uk, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
We're on there. Yeah. Buddy and I are on there. And Jenny's on there as
fabulous.
Well.
Fabulous.
Now, it's your first Crufts this
yes,
year, isn't it? So
please.
you've been out in, with the crowds having a look. So what do you make of Crufts?
I think it's fabulous. It's enormous. I wasn't expecting it to be as big as it is, and all these different companies and these different things you can get. But no, I think it's great, and I've particularly enjoyed the Discover Dog section with all the different breeds. There's loads of them, several that I've never heard of, you know, having been a vet for 6 years. You'd think you'd have seen them all by now, but I haven't. And all the great things the Kennel Club are doing. They, you know, the safety demonstrations, I watched one of those, all the training, the agility, all the, you know, not just the showing. It's a whole dog show, isn't it? It's not just about the beauty contest at all.
No. I think you don't appreciate that until you're actually here. It's a dog show. But there's, I mean, I know the show people like it. It is a dog show, obviously. But there's so much more. I always think it's just a celebration of everything doggy, isn't it? There's every aspect, really.
There really is. And, you know, I've seen the Young Kennel Club, all the kids running around with the dogs. And the dogs themselves, the dogs that are here, I've been really impressed. They're all sitting in their little sort of cupboards or whatever they call them, or they're wandering around. They're confident, they're happy, they're calm. The amount of ones I've seen asleep, it's remarkable. They're obviously really well socialised, used to this sort of atmosphere. You know, I've not seen a single agitated, stressed out one yet, and I think that is what's impressed me more than anything. These dogs are happy dogs. You know, they're not agitated at all.
A few stressed owners.
Probably, yes, running around with brushes and, yes, not eating their dinners.
And can I just put the record straight as well? They're not in cupboards, they're on benches. There's no dogs in cupboards.
No.
Just put that straight before we start a room. So you're having fun, though, at Crufts?
Yeah, no, I've really enjoyed myself. My feet are hurting. I don't doubt that they'll continue to get worse because I've got a long way to walk today. But no, it's been a great, great experience so far.
So you've got plenty of material to go home and blog about now?
Absolutely, yeah, and meeting all these different people from the doggy world is really interesting for me.
Rose Bugler and Sue Jones were at Crufts publicising their DVD, The Well-Balanced Pup. They were approaching the show from a rather different angle.
Yeah, we're having a bit of fun, really. We've brought a press pack of our own, and our press pack is made up of 12 dogs, and we've got all different shapes and sizes, different breeds, crossbreeds, all interested in different activities. They're taking part in what's happening here. So it's as if we've got our own embedded journalists. Just like, you know, the BBC embedded their journalists in the Iraq War, we've embedded our dogs in our journalists in Crufts. And it's fun, but it helps us get an insider's perspective. We've got, on Saturday, we've got a teenager with her Chihuahua Yorkie Cross, who's a rescue dog, and they're covering the shopping. And we've also got a bloodhound called Jethro, and he's going to be reporting on dog days out, and he's an expert in hunting the clean boot. And our lead reporter is Merck, who's with us today here, with his breeder, Sue Jones. And he was the star of our Well-Balanced Pup DVD. And basically, while we're reporting on Crufts and other events over the year. At the same time, we're promoting the things that matter to us, which is all about responsible breeding and helping people understand, particularly new breeders, about the importance of, yes, health and temperament of the parents before you breed from them, but also all the different things you can do with the puppies to make sure that when they leave you, they're really well-balanced pups that are ready to take on anything in the world.
Perhaps we return to Sue. The DVD follows you through about five litters, is that right?
Five litters of puppies, yes.
Yeah.
Over a few years. And I always try to have a complete list of people waiting for puppies even before I breed from a bitch. They have to sort of jump through hoops, come for several hours for an interview. I choose from a litter of puppies the puppy that would actually most suit their situations, and it can range from a full serious search and rescue dog, so you're looking for a different thing in a puppy, an outgoing puppy who's quite sort of independent, to a pet dog for a home with a large number of children, young children, a bereaved person. Whatever the actual situation and the person, the situation of the person that wants a pup, we try and fit the right puppy into the right home, so that there's not much chance of them ending up on the rescue situation, having to be rehomed through one of the charities.
I think it's been absolutely fascinating for me. I mean, we've created this new company called Well Balanced Pup, which is promoting this DVD, but also has got our press pack. But I think one of the things that's been fascinating working with Sue is, and for example, this piece that she said about a bereaved person, it's something I've never heard anybody say before. But there's lots of people who go and buy a dog when everything else has gone wrong in their lives, and they're actually perhaps very depressed, and it's not a good time to be socialising a puppy. And so it's great that when Sue thinks, and this is one of the things she talks about in the DVD, when somebody comes to you to look for a puppy and they're going through this big life change of whatever it is, and you choose the pup very carefully so that they're not going to become too protective of that person, because that could become a problem long term, and you could end up with a dangerous dog for no good reason, you know, for the dog's been looking after the person. And so it's choosing the pup right, and also talking to the person and explaining, because of your circumstances, you've got to take particular care to go out with your puppy. Don't keep it at home with you and just cuddle it. You've got to go out into the world, and it might help that person go out into the world and help them go through their grief process in socialising the puppies, but they're not actually aware of the fact that this is what they're doing. So, I mean, it's been a delight to be able to sort of work with Sue, because, you know, she lives in this amazing location, and we've been filming puppies in bluebell woods and daffodils and wildflower meadows. You know, what a treat.
Well, somebody's got to do it.
Yes.
Sounds like a, you know, dirty job, but somebody's got to do it.
Yeah. So we're here at Crufts, and on different days we've got different dogs with us. But Merck's here today, and we've got somebody taking part in the pre-beginners special...
Stakes.
Good Citizen Stakes, that's the one. And she's one of the pups that Sue bred. One of the other ones that she bred is in the Irish team for the World Cup obedience. And so I think one of the things is that if people realise how well it works, if you go to a breeder that socialises their pups well and who helps you choose the right dog for you, and it's not just a matter of choosing the right breed, it's also choosing the temperament of the pup within the litter that suits you.
Okay. I think offering after sales advice for the whole of that dog's life, so you're looking at maybe 14, 15 years, when that customer can come back at any time and say, look, I've got a problem, what do I do here? And just to give them the backup.
That's how it should be, isn't it?
It is, yes. And it is a big commitment. And so people who breed, even occasionally, should think about it very carefully.
We've got a website, which is www.wellbalancedpup.co.uk, and there's a trailer of the person who did the introduction, who's a top vet, talking about how important these sort of issues are. And we've got a short clip on YouTube of Merck and his fellow pups playing with his mum when they were about 5 weeks?
No.
About eight weeks old. Having just a brilliant time. So that's Peg's pups on YouTube.
Clearly, the Well Balanced Pup DVD covers a very important area and includes a vast amount of really useful information. With all those dog lovers gathered together, Your Dog magazine was selling like hotcakes. I spoke to editor Sarah Wright.
Your Dog's a really practical magazine, so it was launched
when it was launched, the original plan was that it would be a magazine that enabled dog owners to get the best out of life with their pets. So we cover health, training, behaviour, all those sort of issues. But we also include some good general features as well, you know, pretty positive ones, you know, about how much dogs bring to people's lives, you know, things like support dogs, that sort of thing. The whole gamut, really, of dog ownership, but with a very practical theme. So really, we like to think that we're a friendly face, helping hand to help people get the most out of life with their pets.
Yeah. And can readers contact you with problems?
Absolutely. We have a 20-page section in the middle of the magazine, which is called Dog Answers. We have a panel of experts on there, which includes trainers, behaviourists, vets, a whole range of people. And readers can either email or do the traditional write-in with their problems, and our experts will answer them. And then publish in the magazine as well, so people love to go through that section and check out what the other people's problems are.
Or say, I've got that problem.
Pick up tips that way. So that's a really popular part of the magazine. You know, probably certainly one of the most popular sections. We get a huge response to it.
Jolly good. Now, you're here at Crufts, and you've actually done very well, haven't you?
Yeah, we've had a fantastic show. We came here with magazines. We were selling the April issue, which is our current issue, doing a special Crufts offer, you know, a reduced price with a goodie bag, and we sold out yesterday afternoon.
Really?
So we're now sort of down to the, we're selling sort of supplements and anything we can find on the stand, basically.
The furniture,
We've had a phenomenal response, really, and I think that's terrific. You know, lots and lots of people.
It's great, isn't it? Yeah. Is there a website people can go to?
Yes, there is, www.yourdog.co.uk, and that very much complements the magazine, and they can find lots of useful information, tips. You know, they can go on and they can go online and they can join in the forums and that sort of thing and discuss different things.
If you've ever watched the television show Dog Borstal, you'll know what a strong and imposing figure trainer Mick Martin is. We talked to him at Crufts, and we'll be bringing you the interview in the next episode of Dogcast Radio. And I have to say, he's a lot nicer in real life than he seems in that training camp. Till next time, look after yourselves and your dogs.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121 288 0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315 849 2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121 288 0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What is a dog's favourite comedian? Groucho Marx.